a safe place to connect with others, finding God's love after abortion. This is Cradle My Heart Radio. This is where the healing begins. Oh, this is where the healing starts. When you come to where you're broken again, and the light meets the dark. The light meets the dark. Cradle My Heart. With Kim Cotola. Join the conversation. Call toll free 800-811-3003. 800-811-3003.
Thank you so much for joining us and for making Cradle My Heart Radio part of your weekend. You know, when we signed this program on over 5 years ago now, Sunday night seemed like a really good idea. And I don't know if it was the case back then, but in the interim, it's become a big night for entertainment and for big blockbuster events. So I know that if you two are tuning into this program, you mean to, and I really appreciate that. One of the big events that was happening tonight, a nail-biting finish for the Vikings playoff game against the Saints. And if you didn't hear it, the Vikings won. And what was so awesome about it is that the quarterback interviewed immediately after the game. They won it in the final seconds of the game. Case Keenum said, "This is the third best moment of my life. The second being marrying my wife, the first giving my life to Jesus." And the receiver on that incredible catch, Stephon Diggs, says, "I'm only here because my coach believed in me, my quarterback believed in me, and God put me here and let me do this." Wonderful. I'm sure we're going to be hearing more about the faith of these men. We, of course, know a lot about their talent and their skill and leadership on the field. But that's just very, very heartwarming for us as believers to have these men give credit to God in their moment of victory. So a really fun note to begin on tonight. We have a program that I'm very excited about because we have a couple of guests who probably, they're pretty divergent, actually. One, our first guest is going to talk about the impact of abortion on men. And then we're going to talk with someone who founded a pregnancy center in Oklahoma over four decades ago. And she was recognized in the New York Times in their Sunday magazine today as a person who turned the heart of a pro-choice abortion rights advocate who's an attorney who just went and spent time with this humble woman who has led her organization faithfully for, as I said, over four decades. And she just shines God's light in the New York Times Sunday magazine today. So our guest in the second half hour of tonight's program is Barbara Shisco of Birth Choice of Oklahoma. But to get things started, we're going to welcome back to the program Kevin Burke, who's a licensed social worker and co-founder of Rachel's Vineyard, which offers abortion recovery for women and men all around the world. Kevin, welcome back to Cradle My Heart Radio.
Thank you so much, Kim. It's great to be with you and your listeners.
I'm excited to talk with you about your new book. This is, I think, your third or fourth volume that you've worked on. Maybe you've contributed to more, probably. And I know various curriculum and things that I so appreciate the articles that you write about current events when abortion is in the news and sometimes when it isn't in the news, but you sense that it's a backstory. So we wanted to talk with you tonight, though, about your new work, Tears of the Fisherman. Tell us about this book.
I will be happy to do that, but first I have to let your listeners from Minnesota know that they're going to have to come to Philadelphia next Sunday. I'm a Philadelphia Eagles fan. I actually just was watching that game with a couple of fellows I've been a band with, and it was an amazing game. And I was actually driving home in the car. I didn't hear the interviews afterwards, so I was so glad that you shared about their witnessing to their faith in that context. That's really awesome. And I'm very encouraged by that, so that's great. But I still have to root against them, unfortunately.
Yeah, I was going to say, who do you like next week?
Well, I mean, my heart says Eagles. If I'm talking strictly as a football fan, I would probably say the Vikings, but hope nobody's listening from Philadelphia that hears that.
Hope deferred, right?
Yes.
A lot of chances for them.
But thanks so much for allow me the opportunity to share about my book. It's called Tears of the Fisherman. And So, you know, you may be wondering, oh, well, who's the fisherman? Well, of course, that's St. Peter. And, you know, I've been at this for many years with my wife, Teresa, in Rachel's Vineyard, and, of course, the many wonderful volunteers that have spread this ministry over the world. But, you know, I've learned from them. You know, when I went to graduate school for clinical social work, there wasn't a course on abortion recovery or even the fact that abortion could be harmful. It was really off the radar of everyone in social science and psychology. And so I learned from those who have experienced abortion and had the courage to go through the repentance and recovery experience. And so as I journeyed and learned from those, particularly from men who have experienced, been involved in abortion decisions, who participate in the death of their unborn child, I really began to see the Apostle Peter's journey as very similar to the men who again made that rewarding journey of recovery. And when we look at Peter, in the beginning of the book, I really wanted to present Peter not only in his weakness, but in his strength, because Jesus called him with all his gifts, as well as his challenges that needed to be converted. And of course, part of his gift was that he was a fisherman, but sometimes people misunderstand the fishing industry and see these guys as backwater, bumbling, kind of slow-witted men, and they were anything but that. Fishing was big business on the Sea of Galilee. Peter was a manager, his brother as well. It was a family fishing business. So he had employees. He had to manage a business. He had to deal with the ups and downs of the economy, and the fish was very much in demand in that region. So he had a very important job. And, when Jesus called him, I have no doubt. Now, Jesus himself was a tradesman. When we say carpenter, I think the common understanding now for those who study these things is that he was very likely probably a stonemason, perhaps an engineer. Him and his father would have themselves been businessmen. So when he calls Peter, he sees those gifts. But he also saw that part, that area of Peter's pride that would need conversion. And of course, that's part of the theme of the book, is that the journey of Peter in recognizing that he can't rely on his own strength when he said, "I will die for you" at the Last Supper. And then a few hours later, he's denying Jesus. It was that experience of realizing that I can't rely on my own power. I have to rely on the power of Christ in my new role, in my new vocation, in my new leadership position. It was essential for him to learn that lesson. And how did he learn that? He learned that through his grief. It was his tears that were really very powerful part of his being able to then assume his leadership was with the other apostles. But, he had that, him and Paul had that unique calling of leadership in the early church. And so I think that's a message of encouragement and hope for those who have been part of abortion decisions.
Yeah, and I think I really appreciate it, Kevin, because I think that, I know that women experience abortion very differently than do men. I've had the privilege to listen to men's stories as well as women's, not as many. But I know a common thread that I sense with everybody impacted by abortion is, well, I can't fill in the blank. This has disqualified me from ever, and generally it's leadership positions, and certainly leadership positions in the church or among God's people. And I'm sure men, given the weight that they have of leadership, feel this more acutely. Is that part of what you're hoping to do with this latest outreach?
You're absolutely right on, and I'm sure you've seen this in your own ministry and counseling, and is that those who do repent and recover, and the Lord is able to really minister to them, and through the love and ministry of others and the Word of God, and that healing journey, people are then able to embrace those gifts that maybe they haven't, like you said, felt worthy to accept. They haven't heard that call. They haven't assumed. And for men, for example, that role of leadership in the family, spiritual leadership, servant leadership, of course, not controlling others. It's that leadership modeled by Christ and that he tried to show his apostles very powerfully, again, in the washing of their feet, is that, your call is to serve and love those entrusted to you, protect them. And, of course, that's what's violated in the abortion experience for men, is that, again, whether it's a temporary relationship or a long-term relationship, when a woman and an unborn child is entrusted to a man's care, and he then participates in the child's death, and also, you know, the mother is wounded in that experience. Well, that's a great, that's a deep wound to a man as in a very in his heart and his soul. And so, in that recovery journey, he can then, you know, reclaim that authority, that spiritual leadership, and discover again those gifts that the Lord may be calling him to in the church and in his faith community. And mm-hmm. I'm sure you've seen that, Kim. I know I've seen amazing men and women called forth to leadership, not only in this ministry, but other church ministries and other social service in their communities, coming yes. out of that healing journey.
And even within their families, even in relative obscurity, if you will, you know, the vocational type of leadership that doesn't ever get recognized outside of the home.
Absolutely.
It's time for a short break, but when we return, I want to talk a little bit more about something that our guest, Kevin Burke, has just raised. And it's this idea that abortion violates men. I think that's a new idea for many of us, and I want to explore that. And we have probably another 15 minutes to talk with Kevin Burke, and it's not a lot of time for such a big topic, but if you have a question, we'll try to get your question in as well. 1-800-811-3003, because we are live tonight, and Kevin has graciously agreed to give us copies of Tears of the Fisherman. So if you would like a copy, join us with your question or comment. 1-800-811-3003 here at Cradle My Heart Radio. Back in just a moment with more.
A safe place to connect with others. Finding God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll free at 800-811-3003.
Take Faith Radio with you wherever you go by downloading the free Faith Radio app in either iTunes or Google Play today. We hear from listeners every week saying that connecting to Faith Radio is now easier than ever. When you download the free Faith Radio app, you can listen to the station wherever your smartphone or tablet has a signal. So don't delay. Visit iTunes or Google Play today and request the free Faith Radio app.
Seeking to help others find God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll free at 800-811-3003.
That's our number, and we have for our callers tonight copies of Kevin Burke's The Tears of the Fisherman. Kevin is our guest, and he is the co-founder of the Rachel's Vineyard Retreats. He's a licensed social worker, and we're talking about abortion recovery for men. And as he mentioned, if you're just joining us, abortion recovery wasn't even a thing when he was studying at social work school. and I'm not sure that there are many places where it still is, given the attention that it probably should be. Kevin, one of the things that I really keyed in on was you said that abortion violates a man. And I'd like to have you talk about that, because it's difficult for me as a woman to convey this respectfully. In my opinion, abortion emasculates men. It removes them from their place of leadership in their relationships. It destroys their seed. It says that they have no standing legally in the lives of their preborn children. Talk about the violations, the way that abortion violates men.
Yes, I will. And actually, I'm going to also tie that into what I've found is a very vulnerable population of men that are particularly wounded by their participation in abortion. And I'll draw upon one of the chapters in the book deals with men who were in prison, and it draws upon my experience in Florida with a couple of maximum security prisons and an abortion recovery program there. And just to quickly give you some feedback on my experience there is that what I discovered is that, and this is no surprise, I'm sure, to your listeners, many of the men have father wounds that are in prison. Rejection, abandonment, abuse, various kinds of painful issues with their dads. But in addition to that, what I found is that their abortion experience, what I found out is 90% of the guys in prison have a previous abortion and report that abortion had a negative impact on their lives. And here's the connection that I found. And again, these courageous guys taught me this. what they taught me is that they have they had those father wounds. The ways they cope with that pain from their childhood was various acting out behaviors, sometimes high risk behaviors and violence, and some of that stuff led them into criminal activity. At the same time as they were escalating in their, I guess you could call it narcissistic personality development coming out of that father wound, they have the abortion experience. What they later discover in the healing journey is that as they get in touch with their wounds with their dads and their wound, that wounded them as boys, they also discover that their participation in the death of their unborn child or children really exacerbated that wound in a powerful way and contributed in some way to their descent into criminal activity. That's because as children, they're vulnerable, and they had that sense of rejection and abandonment, and of course that later is expressed in anger. But then they become a perpetrator in a sense because they're innocent unborn child, they participate in that child's death. And so it's a very complicated wound. Obviously now most men who have abortions don't get involved in criminal activity, but you can see some of the same dynamics with men who are coming from a family where there was divorce. And that was it's a very painful issue for a young boy or young man when the father is no longer in the home. Perhaps there was molestation of some kind, sometimes it's the father's in the home, but there's a sense of the young boy that he's not really accepted by his father or valued or affirmed. All those things, are wounding in themselves. But when you then have an abortion on top of that, I found that those men have a particular powerful reaction after the abortion and also have an equally blessed experience in their abortion healing as they reclaim the fatherhood of their aborted child and grieve their role in that child's death and reconnect in love with that child. They also have a healing of that experience of their father wound, which is very powerful and beautiful.
You know, my husband Bruce and I have done prison ministry for a lot of years, and I will never forget being on a team where I shared my testimony about how I memorialized my pain. I was a Christian after the abortion, so I knew about redemption and I had repented, but it was still very difficult for me to fully let go of the experience, and talked about how, attaching to that grief meant that I wouldn't lose the child again, if you will. And there were some, men inside who said, thank you for helping me understand why I've been so reluctant to let go of the guilt for my crime, because I feel it would be disrespecting the victim once more. And, for men, as you say, you don't have to be incarcerated to be subject to this dynamic. In the time that we have, and by the way, our phones are open again, 1-800-811-3003. We have time for a question or two from you for Kevin Burke and for our callers tonight, Tears of the Fisherman, his latest book. How does recovery happen for men? You mentioned briefly that men need to grieve, men need to process that guilt, men need conversion of their hearts and spirits. How does the recovery process unfold for men?
The experience of the men in prison was very touching because as they entered into that healing journey, and it was a combination of a support group model, Rachel's Vineyard, and also some exercises from Healing a Father's Heart, which is it was also a Bible study program that's been around for a long time. Wonderful program. And as they went through those exercises and began to, to grow together in faith as a group, they discovered they discovered the love of their Heavenly Father, the unconditional love that even with the crimes that these men had committed, the ways that they had hurt others, the way they had been hurt, that was a really important entry point to grace for them, was this sense of, and they really had not connected with this before, that the unconditional love of their Father in heaven. And that opened a door to so much grace and blessing and time for them to be able to grieve and reconnect in love with their unborn child. But, for women and men, Kim, I think, while the wound may be different, the damage to us as men and women, there's a difference in that, of course, because our roles are different. God made us different. But in the healing journey, it's letting go of those unhealthy attachments that we have, those ways that we are attached to substances, to behaviors, that shame us. You know, there's these unhealthy attachments, and when you can grieve in a healthy way and make that healthy attachment to your unborn child or children who are now, and then you're able to entrust them to the Lord and have that hope, not only of a spiritual relationship in this life, but of eternal union, God willing. You know, that's the healing journey for mothers and fathers and grandparents and anyone who's been closely connected with the death of an unborn child.
You know, and I think one of the loveliest things is the realization that, wait a minute, I'm not disqualified. In fact, God is going to use my worst, most fatal mistake for His glory, for His greatest glory. The leadership that comes out of those experiences, for me, it's such a revelation, because you see zero force, you know, being used. You see zero manipulation. You see a gentleness and a humility in leadership that is really striking.
Yeah, you know, the woman who actually had the courage and opened the doors, and the doors were not open initially. There was initially a lot of, kind of skepticism whether this was needed. But in those prisons in Florida, where the fruit has been amazing, it was a woman who has had a past abortion, and in her healing experience, discovered a call that she would never have recognized to be a counselor. She's an amazing counselor, but even more than an amazing counselor, she's an amazing woman of faith. And she opened the door to the healing for these men. And I tell you, the fruit in that prison and the lights that's shining in that darkness and these spiritual leaders, as you mentioned, that are being called forth in that place of darkness, it's really inspiring to me, even after all these years in the work. So.
And so tell us a little bit about the Rachel's Vineyard Retreat model. Of course, we've had your wife, Dr. Burke, on the program many times, and she's helped us understand how sometimes, you know, even from her perspective as a clinician, that talk therapy is not necessarily the most healing path for us to try to take. What can people expect if they were to sign on for a Rachel's Vineyard Retreat?
Yes, and I think the retreat, surprisingly, is very, you know, very friendly for men as well, because you're not going into a room and just having to talk about your feelings, you know, because that could be kind of a little bit intimidating to some men. And so you do get to your feelings, but there's also an opportunity to kind of warm up. And the way that you're able to do that is because there are scripture exercises, and there's, there's ways that you enter into the experience certain really important gospel stories, such as the blind man or the woman caught in adultery. And by entering into those stories and encountering Jesus in the Word in a very powerful way, it establishes a safety in the group. But you're also moving through various exercises and activities. And so that act, as Teresa's probably explained, that moving through that traumatic experience is very important to be able to then not be overwhelmed by your emotions. It makes it easier to process your feelings with immersed in God's Word and with the love of the faith community. And so it's a very beautiful and powerful reconciliation process.
Well, Kevin, we're out of time, but I sure hope we'll have a chance to visit again soon. And I wish you great success with this book. I'm sure it's going to be very beneficial for the healing of many. Thank you for being our guest tonight.
Thank you so much, Kim.
We'll continue to offer copies of Tears of the Fisherman. You can put a comment on the Facebook post at Cradle My Heart at our Facebook page if you'd like to enter a drawing, or you could also just send us an email. My email is kim@cradlemyheart.org, and we'll put a drawing out, because I know that this is going to be a very, very helpful resource for men wounded by abortion. Now, stay with us. Coming up in our next half hour, we're going to talk with Barbara Shisco, who's the executive director of Birth Choice of Oklahoma. How does she feel about the way that her organization and her ministry was profiled in the New York Times Sunday Magazine today in an article by Michelle Oberman? We'll find out. Stay with us here at Cradle My Heart Radio.
Seeking to help others find God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll-free at 800-811-3003.
Thank you so much for being with us, and thanks for hanging through our second half hour of tonight's program, where we're bringing you another guest. A little bit unusual for us, but I was really pleased to be able to connect with Barbara Shisco after I read the piece that the New York Times previewed earlier this week that appears in their print edition today in their Sunday magazine. So this is a very much of a featured piece from the New York Times, an opinion piece written by Michelle Oberman. And she says, she opens the editorial by saying, as a lifelong feminist from California, I've always believed in a woman's absolute right to make choices about her own body. And as a law professor, I've spent years studying the impact of restrictive abortion laws in places such as Chile and El Salvador. But eventually, she says, I wanted to turn my attention to my own country, trying to understand the aims of the anti-abortion movement here. And so I went to Oklahoma, a state that has enacted so many restrictive abortion laws that it routinely tops Americans United for Life's annual legislative report card. So she says, she writes, I was grateful if surprised to be invited to spend a day at Birth Choice of Oklahoma, a so-called crisis pregnancy center. And Barbara Shisco is the executive director of Birth Choice, and she's joining us on the phone to tell us about the ministry of Birth Choice. And also, I guess I want to give you a chance to just tell us the backstory of this article in the New York Times today. Barbara, thanks so much for being our guest here at Cradle My Heart Radio.
Oh, it is indeed my pleasure to be with you this evening.
Now, Oberman was honest and said pro-choice advocates like me accuse some of them, some pregnancy centers, of false and misleading practices like intentionally misforming women seeking abortion-related information or neglecting to mention that they don't provide abortions or even referrals. And it says such centers, some of which are currently the subject of Supreme Court litigation, typically are faith-based counseling offices. I thought that was an interesting way for her to put it because, of course, the pregnancy centers that are before the Supreme Court right now are arguing for their free speech rights. They're not being sued by anybody for being false and misleading, right? I mean, it's kind of a misleading way for her to have written it. I mean,
well, and again, it's all, you know, from the perspective of the person that is trying to understand us. You know,
right.
We can't understand each other unless we stop and listen to what the other person has to say.
Right.
And I have to admit that Michelle, you know, did a great job in listening to us as it came out in the article, because even though she is still, you know, very actively pro-abortion, she also understands our viewpoint, which is very, very rare. Very
right.
rare for someone to
and,
understand.
And I applaud her for that. And I,
yes.
I applaud you, because I think that by the end of the article, she gives a very honest and very positive portrayal of Birth Choice of Oklahoma. She's still clinging
yes.
to the idea that pregnancy centers are bad and misleading. But she can't bring any charge against you at the end of the piece, and I don't think she really does. Actually, I wonder how you feel about the way the portrait comes across.
Yes, I was very happy with it, especially after I found out, you know, about the book and that she had dedicated the book to us, because you know, basically, you know, from the very beginning, and I've been
now
doing
tell us about the book
years.
Because. She has not, she didn't really mention it or emphasize it in the New York Times piece. Tell us what you know about the book.
Well, the book is just, and I haven't read it, but it's basically, you know, I think it's Their Bodies, Our Laws, Abortion from El Salvador to Oklahoma. And
okay.
we're just a chapter in the book where she comes to Oklahoma and she tries to interview a lot of people that are pro-life. You know, we were very open to her coming and visiting with us. I'm very, very proud of what we've done in Oklahoma, simply because, you know, when we first started 45 years ago, we started out with two folding chairs and a telephone. And all we really wanted to do was just help women that were pregnant, help them to understand their value and how valuable they were because, you know, they were persons of worth and dignity, especially because they were carrying human life. And so, you know, we've slowly grown to today. We have, you know, our four offices in the metropolitan area, and we have a group home for pregnant women. And then we offer such services as, of course, pregnancy testing. We offer a free ultrasound. We have a medical clinic at our office where we have doctors, resident doctors that come and take care of the women. And then we have the group home for pregnant women, which houses up to 6 women and their children. So we've tried, you know, as we've seen a need for women and what women need during their pregnancy, then we've tried to fill that along with, you know, material goods, you know, diapers, formula, maternity clothing. But then we take each woman individually and help her with what her needs are. So it's not, you know, you can only get this service or this service. It's what services do you need? Mm-hmm. If we don't have them, then we'll go find them and try to provide them for you.
And, you know, when we talked about this the day the editorial came out, she, as I understand it, okay, she comes on site and she writes in the New York Times, friends and colleagues joked about my needing a bulletproof vest for my meeting at Birth Choice. Like, what?
Yes.
Like, people are subject to violence when they go to a pregnancy center? That's silly.
Yeah, well, that's the perception that the other side has. And, you know, we have to be realistic. And there has been violence at abortion clinics. But on the same hand, you don't hear about the violence that's perpetrated against, you know, crisis pregnancy centers. And there have been, you know, we've been bomb threatened. You know, we've had, you know, all of those things also. But, you know, we just truly believe that we're doing the work that needs to be done and we're not afraid.
Well, and I want to say on the record, factually, no one who has been convicted of perpetrating abortion violence has been shown to be connected to any pregnancy center.
No.
The pregnancy help community is a totally different animal than abortion rights, abortion opponents who take on that type of activism and violence and criminal activity that has been roundly denounced by everyone I know in the pregnancy help community. So the idea that you'd be under threat in a pregnancy center, as I say, it's nonsense and it's just silly. But as you say, it also reflects the lack of understanding. Now,
yes.
You're so even-handed, Barbara, and I really appreciate that about you. And I really appreciate that you were very open-minded about this visit from this woman who says, I'm an attorney, I want to try to understand what it is that you're doing. And you didn't really know that she was an abortion rights supporter.
No, I didn't. But again, any time that I have a chance to let people know, it doesn't matter who they are, about what we do, about what we've learned, and that I get to share with them what we're able to do, then I'm willing to do it. You know, at any time of the day or night, and we have, you know, and I'm not alone because, you know, we're a strong group here, and so we want to make sure that people understand what we're doing and what the needs of women are, especially our pregnant mothers who become so strong and brave that, you know, they're willing to go against all odds to have their children.
And I know that everything hinges on respect, confidentiality, privacy. I know that that is one of the best practices, and it's an ethic that, in my experience, is completely upheld within the pregnancy help community.
Yes.
But can you share with us, you know, some of the stories or the cases, if you will, that Michelle Oberman might have been, you know, exposed to as she was visiting the work that you're doing at Birth Choice? And is it the Rose Home? Is that the maternity home?
Yes, that's our group home. Yes. Yes,
just the types of stories.
Mm-hmm. Yes, mainly, you know, broken women that come to us. You know, the youngest girl that I've dealt with, she was 10 years old, and she was the product of rape and incest. And she, poor child, did not know that she was pregnant. And so we were able to help her, and I saw her change from, you know, very scared, frightened little girl, and then after she had the baby, you know, her whole demeanor changed, and, you know, she was very open and loving, and, you know, we became close to her. I had a 12-year-old girl that was gang raped, and, you know, she was coerced into having the abortion, and, you know, we were able to help her because her mother came to us and asked us for help, and so we were able to get legal counsel for her, medical counsel for her, and then she listened to everyone's opinion and advice, and then she chose to have her baby. I've had women that have been married that have come to us, and, you know, they can't afford another child. And so they say, you know, I can't afford clothing, and we're able to provide this for them. But, you know, I think the most important thing that our volunteers have to offer is ourselves, that we're willing to sit and listen to her problems and, you know, not give her the immediate answer and, you know, not try to solve them, but just listen. And in listening to them, then they feel worthy and they begin to trust us. And in doing so, then they're able to take what help we're able to give them.
Barbara, I know a lot of people are going to hear a story about a 10-year-old. Maybe they've never heard such a story of a girl choosing life at that age.
Yeah.
So can you tell us some more of the details? I mean, was it a cesarean birth? Was the girl in a dangerous situation that was addressed as well? Tell us a little bit more about that.
She was in a dangerous situation. She was removed. Her caseworker brought her to us, and brought her to us only because she needed to be mothered, and she had not been mothered, and didn't know. She wanted us to teach her how to mother. And it was just maybe 3 or 4 visits that she came to us before she had the baby. And she didn't have a cesarean section. She had a vaginal birth. And, you know, she was a little girl, you know.
Wow.
She wasn't able to keep the child. So, you know, but the time she did have the baby and we would go see her, that's when I saw the change in her, you know, from being scared, this is all over with now, and look what I have. And to me, the beauty of it was that she allowed me to hold her baby, you know. Mm. And so I knew that I had, you know, that she trusted me, you know. But then, you know, being the society that we live in, you know, it was just she couldn't take care of the child, so the child was placed. And she made an adoption plan for her baby. But and very, very heartbreaking. But at the same time, she grew up, you know.
And I know cases. The case that I'm thinking of was Vicki Thorne told me about her friend, mm-hmm. and was the inspiration for her founding Project Rachel, which is, I think, in almost every diocese now in the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
Her friend was an incest victim. And then the family forced her to abort, and she told Vicki the abortion was, you know, many, many, many times worse than the violation.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And it's hard for us to grasp that, but
it is. I've had many, many women that have come to us that have been raped, and they've chosen life, you know, and I've seen their heartbreak. You know, it's the same thing with the little girls that come and they decide to make an adoption plan. And to those mothers, because we're all mothers, irregardless of what happens to the pregnancy.
That's right.
You know, we're all mothers. And so to those mothers, you know, I see them as strong, courageous, heroic women that will give birth to a child and allow someone to take them and raise them. And so, and I've been there when this has happened. One of my first cases that I had, the little girl called on the phone, and every time I'd answer, she'd hang up. You know, she'd be on the phone for a little while. This went on all afternoon, and I didn't know what to say or how to get her to talk to me. And finally, I just said, the next time she called, I said, "Let God give me the words." And when I answered the phone, I said, "I am just as scared as you are. Won't you please talk to me?" And I could hear her sobbing, and so she broke down, and she told me that she was in school, she was getting ready to graduate, she had a full college scholarship, and she was pregnant, and she wanted no one to know. And could I help her arrange to place her baby for adoption? Because she had already thought it all out, but she didn't want her family to know. Could I get her someplace? So I was able to contact an agency, an adoption agency, and they went and talked to her, and then they found her a place to live. And then they were able to send word to her parents without her knowing from another state so that they wouldn't know where she was. And she gave birth, and I was there when she handed the baby over to the adoptive parents. And and then she went back and finished school. And so, you know, we've had a little girl give birth to a baby at home and call us for us to come get the baby, you know. So there have been so many stories over the years.
Mm-hmm. But I think
the thing that always surprises me is the courage that women have to stand alone and do the right thing. And so many times they do stand alone.
Yes, we're going to take a short break, and then we'll be back with more with our guest, Barbara Shisco, Executive Director of Birth Choice of Oklahoma in Oklahoma City. And her work is being written about in the New York Times today. Join us if you'd like. 800-811-3003 is our number. Coming back in just a couple moments here at Cradle My Heart Radio.
A safe place to connect with others. Finding God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cotola. Call toll-free at 800-811-3003. Seeking to help others find God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cotola. Call toll-free at 800-811-3003.
We are talking with Barbara Shisco, and her work is the subject of an essay in the Sunday New York Times Sunday Magazine today. And they published this a little bit earlier in the week on their op-ed pages online. So I had a chance to read it and invite Barbara to tell us about this remarkable story, because although the author takes some, in my opinion, cheap shots at the pregnancy health community and the anti-abortion movement, however you want to state it, she really cannot find anything negative to say about Birth Choice of Oklahoma or Rose Home. And in fact, and I apologize, you're right, Barbara, it's mentioned in the New York Times piece that the essay is excerpted from Michelle Oberman's book, Her Body, Our Laws. And it's a bestseller right now on Amazon. She's a law professor at Santa Clara University. It was a little bit frustrating for me that in this essay, after she gets done, you know, applauding all the work that Birth Choice is doing to help all of the many clients and their diversity and in their crises, she says, well, the problem is the government policies that make being pregnant and being a mother so expensive. And she completely switches gears away from the ways in which you're offering this tangible support into turning it into a policy question. I don't know if you want to comment on that, or if you felt the same thing as you were reading her words?
Well, one of the biggest problems that women face when they become pregnant is, can I afford it? And because medical costs are so high, you know, women don't think that they can. So when I visit with them, and our volunteers and our staff visit with women, and that's their reasoning behind wanting an abortion, then we're able to say, no, you can have this baby, and here's how we can help you, because we have the clinic, and they can come in, and there's no charge. You know, there's no charge for any of our services. You know, if she happens to, and we've had several women that fall in that gray area where they make too much money but not enough to cover the pregnancy, then we're able to find someone to help them so that they're able to be able to afford their baby. You know, one of the biggest problems is that, you know, the women are left alone to face their pregnancy totally alone, you know, without any support from family or father of the baby or husband or boyfriend. You know, a lot of husbands, when they find out a woman gets pregnant again, you know, and they don't want that baby, then they leave her. You know, we've seen that happen, you know. There's not a day or a week that doesn't go by that we have a similar story, you know. After all these years, you know, the stories are all the same, only the names change with some of the women that we see. So, you know, I understand, you know, that this is a policy issue until we can have health care and women don't have to worry about how they're going to be able to afford the baby. Will they not consider abortion as an option, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I've seen that, you know, I've seen how, and then once we say, you know, but, you know, there's this program that can help you, then, you know, they want the baby, you know, once they see that baby on ultrasound, you know, they want the baby, you know, so it's, women have reasons why they abort, and, you know, we just need to find ways to help them with those reasons and help them, you know, push them to the back so that they're able to, you know, be the mothers that they are.
Sure. And I want to give you the opportunity, because this didn't ring true with everything else in the portrait on this article, where you are quoted as saying that, here's how it reads. The Rose Home Shelter is a rarity among crisis pregnancy centers, a large majority of which, according to Ms. Shisko, follow, quote, rigid rules, no shelters, no clinical services, just administer pregnancy tests and give out baby clothes. Just persuade the woman not to abort their babies, end quote. And I have a feeling that maybe this was taken somewhat out of context, if in fact that was a direct quote. I want to give you a chance to clarify that.
Yeah. Well, rigid rules, policies, you know, there's certain centers that's all they do, and they won't go beyond that because they don't have the resources. You know, we've been blessed with Rose Home. We've been blessed with our medical clinic because we've been able to have people that have come forward to help us with that. You know, other pregnancy centers don't have those resources. Most of the pregnancy centers run on, and I mean shoestring budgets. We, for instance, when we first started, we were totally volunteers for the first 25 years, where there was no paid staff. And so most of pregnancy centers today are run that way. And so it's not so much as a rigid rule as it is this is all they can afford to do, having the resources they have. We're a nonprofit 501c3, and the majority of our donations come from private donors. It's, you know, we don't have any large government grants or large foundations that fund us. You know, I have large donors, individual donors that fund us. And so, you know, this is something that's a real struggle in the nonprofit world, is, you know, to find that charity dollar that will help us so that we're able to give the women what they need so that they're able to have their babies.
And also, I mean, there's a statement coming right after that about how there's a congressional report on federally funded crisis pregnancy centers that they provide false or misleading information about the health effects of abortion. I just want to give you a chance to comment, if you care to, on that. Because this report was, I think, filed in 2006. I don't know if, you know, the pregnancy help movement has changed over the last decade. I know that this is a charge. You would think that that report, something would have been done if there was a lot of misleading, false, you know, activity going on. Mm-hmm. For 12 years, you would think Congress would have acted instead of just having this report floating out there. I'll give you a chance to speak about that if you'd like to.
As far as the report goes, you know, I can only address what we do, you know, and that's that we tell the truth. You know, we're there to make sure that the woman knows the truth. One of the very, very first cases that I had was a young woman that had an abortion, and she'd gone to the pastor because she was so upset, and she was crying in the back of church, and he called me and he said, I can't help her. She needs a woman to talk to her. And when I went to get her, she was in a fetal position. And, you know, of course, she'd had the abortion. You know, she wanted everyone to let the father of the baby know that she had done what he had asked her to, and he had already thrown her out. I had to take her back to the abortion doctor.
About a minute left. I'm sorry.
Okay. And so she, you know, he just basically told me that, you know, she was mentally unstable and that I needed to get her mental health. So, you know, I see how we're portrayed. I see that people think that we're doing, you know, the opposite of what they want to believe that we do, when in truth, we do what we need to do so that she's able to carry her child to term.
Barbara Shisko, thank you so much for joining us. And we've got a link to Birth Choice of Oklahoma. As you heard, it's a nonprofit organization. Maybe you've been inspired. You want to join the mission. Thank you, Barbara, for letting us know about it. And kudos on the great representation in the New York Times. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
And we are out of time, so I'll just refer you to cradlemyheart.org, where you'll learn more. And I hope that you'll interact with us there or on our social media. We'll be back next week, and I hope we'll see you then. Remember, Jesus loves you, and so do we.
Thank you.